What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I mean, nobody's buying them. I feel like you could go to the dealer and like just, you know, ask how their day is and be nice to them, and they'll let you like just leave with a car. Hello and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show all about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief at Inside EVs.
And I'm Kevin Williams, staff writer here at Inside EVs. Filling in for Tim Levin. He's actually on vacation. So
Tim's in New York City having a nice time and enjoying what I hope is still good weather. So Kevin, thanks so much for joining us, man. I'm really, really super amped that you're coming on. And I'm just hanging out with you since we were in China a few weeks ago.
Yeah. It's nice to be here again. I know we had a grueling 12 days together, right?
Parts of it were grueling. I wouldn't describe the part hanging out with you as grueling because I like you a lot, but like the rest of it, kind of yes. And it took my body like a month to recover from that travel schedule. So, you know,
yeah, it's a lot. It's definitely an adjustment. I didn't realize how much I like, you know, do on these China trips until I have someone else with me.
Yeah.
Cause I know during some parts you were like, oh my God, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard and it's so expensive to get over there. It's like you want to cover as much ground and talk to as many people and drive as many cars as you possibly can. And it's like you end up like, we didn't have any weekends or time off. Like it was just like, you know, 12 plus hours a day doing everything we could to cram stuff in.
Yeah, it really was just nonstop. It's refreshing, but Jesus, I was ready to go home near the end there.
Yeah. The me time was needed. However, we have a bonus for anybody listening or watching this today. Kevin, very generously, because he stayed on in China a little bit longer after I did, he bought me a gift, which I love, and then he shipped it to our office in New York City, which I only go to when I absolutely have to, because I'm not like an office-facing person. But on your podcast today, you get a little bit of an unboxing video to go with your pod, and this is this giant model you bought me of the Xiaomi SU7, China's Apple car, and the Porsche Taycan that's 30 grand and also better. So thank you for this, man. Where did you get this guy?
I had to actually. I met up with Wheels Boy. His name's Ethan. He's another big YouTuber in the China car auto space. And you know, we had lunch. We started walking around looking at different Chinese cars. We went to a Xiaomi store, and I saw a couple there, and I was like, well, I want one of these. And it wasn't that easy to buy one as like a foreigner, because I think you needed like a Chinese phone number to do it, which obviously I don't have since I don't live there. But once we got that all settled, you know, I just paid with Alipay, and then I took it home with me. It was great.
Yeah, extremely kind of you. And like this was sitting around our office for days, and people were really jealous of it. And I had a few of our coworkers come up and be like, oh man, I really wanted that Porsche Taycan model you have. And it's like, no, actually it is different.
No.
Man, this is a really nice piece of kit. Look at this guy.
It's a super nice piece of, it's a super nice device. I was actually really surprised at how like, you know, well crafted that thing is.
Yeah. No, this is definitely cut above your average like diecast model, of which like I don't actually collect diecast models, but just by virtue of what I do for a living, I end up with a collection of them over the years. So thank you for that, and it's a good way to kick this off with China's Apple car. Next time one of us is over there, we'll have to try and get the SUV next time too.
Yeah, that would be really cool. We'll see. Hopefully soon.
Hopefully soon. All right. Well, last time we had you on the Plugged In podcast a few weeks ago, you know, you were recapping some of the cars that you got to drive over in China. Now that you're back, you've been publishing more stories, and I wanted to talk about one of the biggest cars, not literally, certainly, that you got to drive in China, and that was the BYD Seagull. So that was like one of the main events for you over there, right?
Yeah, it was, because I know we were kind of brainstorming together. We were trying to figure what we could get from this China trip. You know, we added a couple of days on ourselves. and you wanted to get the megawatt charging. And I was like, well, I really want to drive a Seagull because, you know, it's China's best-selling car. It seems so unassuming on its surface, right? But whenever, like, you know, we put BYD Seagull in the title of anything at Inside EV, it's like, you know, everybody clicks. It's to the point where it's like, you know, really crossed over that blood-brain barrier where we're now getting, like, you know, normal people asking about the Seagull. And that's really freaking out a lot of automotive executives. You know, like, why is everyone so into this car? Americans want to know why we don't have it. Auto execs want to know, like, how can we beat it? And I want to know, is this why does everybody have all these complicated feelings for this car that's not that big and not that expensive? So
yeah, for sure.
We threw it together last minute, but it really was so last minute. But we got it together, and I'm really glad that I drove it. Even though it's not my favorite car I drove on the trip, I do think it's probably the most important.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And like there were two reasons like we did this, like you said. Like there's just the fact that it is such a crucial car, and there's also like really cynical like YouTube views and traffic reasons for that too, because it gets a lot of attention for a little thing. But like the reason it does is in China these days, it starts around the equivalent of $8,000. That is eight, not 80 or 18, 8,000. And it's coming to Europe soon as the BYD Dolphin Surf. It's not going to be as cheap there, but it's under 20,000 euros for a very good electric car, which is like there's not many EVs in Europe that are going to that really cheap price, right?
Yep. It's also making its way in Latin America and a lot of other Asian markets as the Seagull or I think Dolphin Mini. And pretty much wherever it's being sold, it's doing really well.
Yeah, it is. And I want to talk about with that with you, because like you had this great story at Inside EVs about driving the Seagull. And it wasn't just a car review. It was like why this thing matters and like why the Western automakers are afraid of this thing. But like you hit on some really universal points about like what ordinary folks aren't getting when they buy cars. But like, first of all, to even drive this thing, you started in Shanghai and you had kind of a hell of a trip to even get to this vehicle, right? You want to tell that story?
Yeah, we sure did, because I know the two of us, for the viewers out there, you know, we're trying to put together some of this BYD content. We weren't on a BYD trip, but we were like, we're gonna meet up with BYD and do this stuff, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, like, two things. One, we kind of just got added on last minute to a lot of these things when we were in China. And yeah. Also, we were doing this during the week of a national holiday. So I think it's like, it's on Chinese, like, Labor Day.
Yeah, Chinese Labor Day, yeah.
Then another holiday. So part of the reason why I ended up getting stuck in China for a little longer than I wanted to be is because there were literally no flights out of China on May 1st because it was Chinese Labor Day and it was like, you're not flying anywhere, sorry. Like, those planes are full. But yeah, they couldn't get me a car in Shanghai for a couple of reasons. One, I think there was just too much going on. And then two, there's actually kind of a citywide rule. If cars are too short and too cheap, you basically cannot register them in Shanghai. So like if you live there, you can, or excuse me, if you live near there, you can basically visit, you know, Shanghai in one of those cars. Because you do see them every now and again.
Yeah.
You're not going to find them with a Shanghai plate. So when they finally did figure out where a car was, it was in a town or another city just outside of Shanghai called Suzhou. And they had one for me there. So I had to go, figure out a way to get there. And we got it confirmed basically the day before Chinese Labor Day.
Yeah. And to reiterate here, like this was not a press trip either of us did. Like when I did the megawatt charging or you drove the Seagull, like we kind of just like showed up in that country and sort of kicked the door down a little bit until we got what we wanted. And I met a very nice English-speaking PR rep at BYD. And I was like, can you hook Kevin up with a Seagull? And he was like, yeah, it's going to take some doing, but yes. And then and then you had to make the trip happen.
Yep, had to make the trip happen. Nobody spoke any English. I was just using a lot of Google Translate, Apple Translate, because, you know, Google doesn't work there. But yeah, it's so funny because, like, you know, I finally got the car secured basically 5 p.m. the day before I was supposed to be there. And I was like, well, let me think on it. and then let me see if I can get a high-speed train to get out there, because, you know, a driving distance would have been about 2.5 hours, and I didn't have a car, and also, that just sounds like hell, especially since it was going to be during, you know, a Chinese holiday where the roads are certainly going to be more packed.
And they love tolls in that country, too. I mean, it's like New Jersey on steroids. Yeah.
They really do. And then by the time I was able to, you know, figure out which train I would need to take, they were all booked. Every single one, first class, main class, even standing room only had been booked. Starting even at 5 a.m. the whole day. And I'm like, well, I remember texting. He's like, hey, I don't even know if this is going to happen. But and I was just like so frustrated. He's like, you know, maybe I should just call and not do it. I was like, no, well, let's see if we can get this working. So I went to sleep, and then I woke up early, like the crack of dawn, and then checked the trains again. And I think they literally just added a train, like China Railway, they had added a train to each of the lines, like just clipped a whole
for the holiday.
Yep. So I was able to get a train ticket. And then an hour later, I got on the train to Suzhou. It's a 25-minute ride. Then it took a rideshare to a random BYD dealer in the outskirts of Suzhou, and then had to speak to the translator, and then they did a copy of my temporary license, and then they handed me the keys and said, bye-bye.
I just want to add that, like, what we did, this is like the most American shit ever, too. It's just, like, two Western dudes just, like, show up in the country and take whatever they want. Like, you know, fill at 11. Like, some stereotypes are true for a reason, right?
I guess that's kind of true. I mean, everybody was pretty accommodating. They knew what we were there to do.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, I genuinely enjoyed driving that thing. And I was also very glad to have it alone, even though, you know, I'm just kind of driving around a random Chinese city and where I can't really read the signs. And I only half know how to navigate with, you know, these foreign map software. But, It really worked out. I am very glad that it worked out, because it I think it really made it worthwhile. And it definitely gave me a more complete picture of, you know, what Chinese people like, and why the market looks the way it does.
Yeah. So let's run through the Seago real quick. We know it's cheap. It's a subcompact hatchback. I think it's kind of the size of like a Chevy Spark or like a Chevy Beat or something.
It's like Chevy Spark sized. I think if you look dimensionally, it's like roughly tit for tat. I think it might be like a couple inches longer, but most of it goes to the wheelbase. Yeah, and it's not a big car. I mean, it only seats four, and it kind of bucks the trend, because, you know, the Chinese market really does mirror the U.S. in a lot of ways. They tend to buy cars per pound. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they want they want big and wide and long cars.
Yeah, they're like us. They like their big SUVs, their big sedans and stuff.
They do. And the Seagull is not.
Yeah,
but it's selling super well, because it just feels such a very well finished car for what it is.
Yeah. So we're talking about the one you had, 39 kilowatt hour battery. So not a very big battery. That's about half what's in my Kia EV6 for context, and only 75 horsepower. Top speed is 81 miles an hour. 0 to 60 happens in a very languid 13 seconds, but it's still good for on the Chinese cycle anyway, up to 252 miles of range, which that's enough for the price is really good. Yeah,
it really is. And, you know, I think it might be able to get close to it. Probably not the whole 252. I think when I did some hand calculations and I looked at the car's on-road efficiency, I was getting about 5.3 to 5.4 miles per kilowatt hour.
Wow. Which is remarkable.
And that's with me driving like, you know, an asshole American with places to be, blasting the AC. Yeah, so by comparison, I think, you know, the worst efficiency I've probably ever seen in a car was the Rivian R1S. And I had it in the middle of summer, blasting the AC, just driving normal pedestrian or normal speed limit. And I was probably going about, I think I was getting about 1.8 miles per kilowatt hour.
Right.
Which is not great. I would say the Chevy Equinox EV, you know, it won our best car of the year last year. I think I was doing good to get 3 miles per kilowatt hour.
Yeah. 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 Anything over three is decent. Anything over four is really good. And like the reigning champion in America is on paper anyway, the Lucid Air, which gets around 5.2 miles per kilowatt hour in some trims. So like that's sort of our official champion. And like the little seagull just completely matches it, which is insane, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think probably tit for tat I could think of is the Fiat 500e, which actually matches the seagull in a lot of metrics. I think the 500e is faster, but they have roughly about the same size battery. I think the 500e is 44 kilowatt hours. So like a little bit bigger than the seagull, but not that much. And I really not putting energy into economical driving. I got about 4.3 miles per kilowatt hour, which once again is not bad for what it is. But yeah, the Seagull definitely blew that out of the water. You know, it felt nicer than the 500e, and it also has a second set of doors that really makes, like, you know, carrying people or things a lot easier. You know, the Seagull still strikes me because of how workable it is for so many uses. You know, whenever I think of little small EVs like this, you know, where even if they're four door, they're just such limited devices. They're so tiny. They're so not really set up to carry more than, like, you know, a passenger or two at a time. Whereas, like, you know, the Seagull really does feel like kind of a very small family car that it could be used in that way.
And it's a nice car too, is kind of the overriding thing. Like, it's, you know, I want to talk about this more with you, but it's like, for the longest time, if you bought like a cheap car in America, like, which barely exists anymore now, but it was like, you know, cloth seats, the worst transmission in the world, like no options, you know, you're lucky to have, you know, anything at all. And like, this was a pretty, like, a nice place to spend time for its size and cost, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what gets me. It's like, you know, it just felt, sometimes I wonder how many, you know, automotive executives have been poor. How many of these designers or engineers have really been poor within even the past 15 years? You know,
yeah.
I feel like when they're designing small, cheap cars, they have like an idea of what they think people want. And the idea comes across as, like, you know, it's almost a little disrespectful, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't want to buy a car. Poor people don't want to buy cars that have nothing to them, you know? Like, you know, I want, you know, a fancy, you know, infotainment system. I want power windows. I want air conditioning. I want electric windows. Looking at you, Slate. I don't want to crank my own window. That's weird. I want seats that are soft. I want a ride that feels nice. You know, I want all of those things.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be reminded that I can't have that with the car that I can afford.
You wrote something in that story that really stuck with me, and it said, it feels like a real car made for real people instead of a sloppy device meant to remind those who don't have so much money just how poor they are. It's downright dignified. And yeah, I think it's a lovely concept. Lovely concept, you know?
Yeah, and I even think of, like, even in China itself, I think of the, you know, Western brands that I've had experience with that would roughly be about the same price. You're gonna look at an old cut rate Chevy that has, like, you know, crank windows and really scratchy plastic, you know, a terrible radio with no sort of phone connectivity at all, versus you can go to a Chinese domestic brand and you get all of those stuff for a price that's a little bit cheaper.
Yeah,
you know, if I lived there, you know, that I would, it seems like a no brainer, right?
Especially if you lived in a city too. And it's, you know, we have to remind people that, like, there's a lot of reasons that car costs what it costs, including the fact that, like, labor costs in China are way lower than they are in the United States or Europe. And that this is why, and there's other reasons that, like, this is a 20,000 euro car in the European market. But I love that it exists because here in America, like, we have kind of just abandoned the cheap, small car segment entirely. I mean, forget electric. It's just like 10 years ago, you could buy a Ford Fiesta or Mazda 2, a Chevy Spark, you know, and any number of like smaller, more affordable options. And there are very few of those around anymore. I think the Nissan Versa even is on the way out, you know, and they'll tell you, oh, well, get a used car in America if you want. You know, that's, but those are on average like 30 grand now. So yeah, what are you supposed to do?
Not just cheap to buy, but I feel like the thing is kind of cheap to maintain. You know, the battery's not that big, the tires are little. You know, I sometimes worry, even with me, you know, I'm looking for, I personally am in the market for a used EV. And as much as I like, you know, some of the luxury cars that I can get for really cheap, you know, that stuff scares me. You know, it's still going to have, like, you know, maintenance costs inherent to you know, an expensive vehicle. You know,
yeah.
Not trying to spend $1,000 on tires when they wear out. And they will wear out because the car is heavy as hell and super fast. Versus, like, you know, a Sequel, I'm looking at the tires on that thing. And you can get that from, yeah, that's interchangeable with any given subcompact car within the past 20 years. Little things like that. And I feel like automakers are forgetting what an economy car means. And it felt like BYD remembered.
I love that. And I think it's, this is why this thing matters, right? Is because there's a way in to do this. And I'm not saying that, like, BYD would have a hit in America with selling the Seagull here if they even could. Like, if the tariffs right. were gone, or the geopolitical tensions we have with China were gone. But it's like, this is what Toyota did. It's what Volkswagen did with the Beetle. It's what Hyundai did. Like, there's a playbook where you get in, you give people a great car at a great price, probably small and economical, and then you build from there. Then you give them a good mid-sized car, then you give them an SUV, then you give them a luxury brand. Like, this exists. It has happened in our lifetimes. And, like, I think if there's a way that BYD could figure out how to do, like, an American version of this, then, like, Ford and GM and Toyota, anyone who sells car, I'd be worried, I think.
Yep, I think they already are. Because it's not just a BYD thing. I think Geely has a similar model that's a little bit bigger, that is kind of neck and neck with the Seagull. I think technically it may have passed the Seagull in top sales last month. I think the Shenyang, it's similarly small. But like the Seagull, it's a dignified vehicle. You know, the people are getting their dignity. It doesn't feel like it's super cheap. They feel like they're getting a real transportation device. And I think that's what scares people. Like, you know, even as cars like the Seagull make their way to Europe, you know, inevitably, you know, they're not going to be as cheap as they are in China, for a few reasons. Partially is because, like, you know, they want to make more profit. Then, of course, you got any sort of import tariffs. And plus, I think the Dolphin Surf, it's the European market Dolphin Surf has a couple different changes. Specifically, it's got, I think, a bigger crash structure. So, like, so it
makes sense.
A little bit bigger. Then it has, like, a little bit more power. Because, you know, I said the 75 horsepower is kind of slow. I think the top trim Dolphin Surf has 156. That's probably actually kind of quick now. And it had a little bit more battery. Yeah, that's light and nice, right? But I know BYD, they're running, I think, lease specials for this thing. I think it's like 99 euro for any trim.
Which is insane. Yeah, and that's wild. Like, the European market, they've had the same problem as us in America. It's like, cars are too expensive. Nobody can afford them. And, like, you come in with a deal like that, like, that's just, you know, somebody at Volkswagen having a really bad couple weeks at work.
If BYD somehow figured to get a Seagull or even the larger Dolphin here for under $200 a month lease, they would make so much money, or at least they would sell so many units, you know? Like, it's just to be a constant line out the door of, like, people wanting a cheap car. That I don't even think range would matter at that point.
Yeah. Especially if they found a way to build out a charging network, to, like, Tesla style almost, regardless of who it's open to. It's like, you know, they've done that. Like, they have the playbook for it. I guess last thing I was going to ask you too is, do you think the Slate truck could fill that gap here in America?
Absolutely not.
Why is that?
For starters, it only seats two.
Hmm.
You know, I think people kind of underestimate how many people want, like, you know, a second set of seats.
Sure.
I personally can't imagine, you know, a whole bunch of people buying en masse a big truck, or it's a little truck at least, you know, that only seats two. Like, I personally have no need for a pickup truck, and I, you know, even living here in Ohio, but I would like, you know, a four-door car, or at least a car with another set of seats so I can take, like, other people with me.
Yeah. Yeah, throw your stuff in the back.
Yeah, and I guess, like, the Slate has, like, you know, the convertible or the the do-it-yourself, you know, second row seats and metal roof. But at that point, we still don't have pricing on that thing, and it's not going to be the $20,000 that they're advertising for the bass truck, is it?
So we'll see what happens.
We'll have to see, because I remain skeptical. I don't know if this... I appreciate the concept, but I'm just so skeptical of this whole idea. I think it's something that's made up by a person and their friends, but that's not necessarily listening to what people actually want. But I could be totally wrong, and I could be eating crow when it comes out. Who knows?
Yeah, that's going to be the one to watch, if that can be America's competitor to this stuff. I have a weird quirk that I hate, like, putting, like, groceries and stuff in a pickup truck. Like, where are you... A frunk is great if it's an EV, right? But, like, where are you supposed to put your groceries? Like, behind the seats? You can't put them in the bed, because then your milk is going flying all over the freeway and hitting people's windshields and whatnot. It's just, I don't know. It's not...
Yeah. Personally, I just don't want a pickup truck, because I don't want people to ask me to do stuff for them.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and you're moving every other weekend.
Exactly. That's always what happens when people get pickup trucks. It's, hey, can you help me move? Hey, I've got this thing to do. No. Leave me alone. Yeah. I can't do that. No, thank you.
Yeah. I don't want to tow your boat to the lake.
Right, right. But I wouldn't mind, like, you know, taking somebody with me on a night out. That's fine. It's just, I don't know. Everybody really loves that car, man. But I'm just like, this just seems like a pair of cheap shoes that you realize they're kind of gross in base trim. And then, like, the second you start adding stuff that makes it, you know, kind of nice, you realize it's not that cheap anymore, is it?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, I could see a lot of those going for, like, 40 or something like that.
Also, it's really goofy looking. Like, it looks like a unibody car that they hacked the back off of. So it's, like, weirdly short and, like, weirdly tall. Like, I don't like the way it looks. It looks bad. Yeah. So I think it looks nice in the wagon trims, but the pickup trim just looks unfinished and stupid to me.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water, but you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Interesting. I'm excited to see how that all plays out. We'll shift gears a little bit and talk about one other thing that we got to test while we were over there in China. Not necessarily because we're sipping for China all the time. I'm actually kind of tired of talking about how advanced that market is, and am eager to tell more stories of how Americans and Europeans and everybody else are trying to catch up a little bit. Because it's, you know, it's more fun to root for the underdog anyway. But we tested one other car over there that we think, or at least I think, might be the key to, like, making plug-in hybrids actually good. And you want to tell folks what that one was?
Yeah, we drove the Lincoln Co. 900, not Lincoln, L-Y-N-K and C-O.
Yeah,
100. It's Geely. Lincoln Co. is kind of like a weird, I would say it's equivalent to Acura, if that makes sense. But it's their new flagship SUV that sits at the top of the lineup here. It's plug-in hybrid only, kind of an EREV, but kind of not. But yeah, we drove a top of the line version while we were there, and it's actually really, 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 really nice.
Yeah, so this is a Geely Group car, because that's the company we went with. And Geely owns Volvo. They own Polestar. They also own other brands that we don't have access to. Kind of inexplicably, they own Lotus now, too. But there's, of the ones we aren't sold in America, there's, like, Zeekr, which is a little bit more upmarket, and then Lincoln Co., which is a little more downmarket. So, like, one of them is, like, kind of like Chinese BMW, and the other one's kind of like Chinese Acura. Like, am I getting that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's about right. I think even Geely themselves are not quite sure what these brands do, but whatever, we're here now. So,
yeah. And then a few times we would ask people in China about Polestar and they were like, who? Like, oh, I was like, okay. Well, yeah. Don't mean to bring that up. Yeah. So they'll figure that out. But of the sort of like broader Volvo Polestar cinematic universe DNA is actually really evident in this Lincoln Co. 900 SUV we drove, because it's crazy nice. Just like cream white leather interior, like this really lovely shade of dark turquoise. It kind of looks a little, you'll get mad at me for saying this, I think it looks a little Range Rover-ish, but I don't mean that in a bad or way, or saying it's copying or anything. It's kind of, it just has that like sort of like sleek, you know, like, but with muscular presence, like two box SUV vibe to it, you know?
Yeah, that's, I know when we saw it in person, I was like, yeah, right. But also I've been having a long day. But I could see why you could say that. It is really nice though. I went to the actual vehicle launch while I was there, and it's probably one of the prettiest launches I've ever been on. Like they had like waterfalls and violinists. It was kind of crazy. But yeah, it's such an interesting vehicle. I think more so mechanically for me, you know, because it just seems like there's kind of it's almost overkill. How much stuff is going on there? What did you think of it?
I'll start with like it was really freaking nice and just like a lovely way to spend a day. And like I think I said on a previous podcast, like I'm not really a big SUV guy. Like I own a crossover because that's what we have in America. But like I don't love driving big vehicles, but I really love being in this thing. But the real star of the show is the powertrain. And on the one that we tested, the Lincoln Co. 900 we tested, you get a 52 kilowatt hour battery, which is pretty like medium large size battery, and a 2-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder engine. And like that's very similar to like a Volvo XC90 plug-in hybrid in America, except the Lincoln Co., the battery is much bigger. By comparison, the XC90 has a 19 kilowatt hour battery. So the car we drove in China, the battery size 2.5x bigger, and it shows, because this thing gets 174 miles of all electric range and gets 897 miles of total range, hence the name 900, because it's like almost 900. Mm-hmm. And again, that's on China's like more generous testing cycle, but even in America, like on EPA rules, like this car would get 100 miles of electric range, if not significantly more than that, like very easily, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also one thing that's interesting about that battery is it's rated for China's 4C standard, which they say it can charge up to 4 times as fast as the actual capacity. So I was having a hard time finding an actual, you know, charging rating, but they did say it would do the 20 to 80 sprint in 17 minutes.
Interesting. So it like charges like a real EV. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So in theory, you could do most of your driving, you know, electrified, and it can charge like an EV. Part of it is because of I think it's the actual battery. It's made by CATL. It's called, I think, the Freevoy battery. It's designed for plug-in hybrids and extended range EVs, and it's meant to be able to, you know, take the abuse that's similar to an EV here. But it was kind of interesting how, you know, electrified that thing felt. I almost wish it wasn't a plug-in hybrid vehicle, right?
Why do you say that?
Because it's so good at electrified driving that I just kind of felt like the gas engine was just in the way a little bit.
Interesting. You know? Yeah, that was the secret sauce. Like this thing, it drives like an EV, like all of the time. Like it's really quiet and has that instant torque, and it's silent and just like very, very smooth. And, you know, you feel the gas engine start to work if you like really hammer on it. Like I remember like twice we just like stood on it just to see if we could get it to like really kick over. And that's the only time you do. Otherwise, it's just recharging the battery. And like I often don't understand the line between a plug-in hybrid and an extended range electric vehicle, which is like, you know, like literally a EV with a gas engine. I don't often know where the line is, and this one really blurs that line, I think. I mean, do you ever figure that out?
I think so too. You know, it's I love trying to get behind the wheel of these plug-in hybrid vehicles and just trying to figure out what exactly the powertrain's doing. And after the engine started, while we did the couple little, you know, full throttle sprints, I was like, well, I don't know what this thing is doing anymore. I give up. It's just such a complicated powertrain. For those of you guys listening in, it basically what it uses is, you know, we talked about the 2-liter four cylinder that's kind of Volvo-ish and the 52 kilowatt hour battery, but it has what's called a dedicated hybrid transmission, which is it's very similar to Honda's hybrid powertrain, where it uses two electric motors to get the car going, and then it has like a direct to the wheels direct drive for the engine to turn the wheels if needed. But for Geely's group, what they do is, instead of it being a direct drive, it's basically another 3-speed transmission that for that direct drive. So it's really, really flexible. And then at the back of the car, you know, with our top of the range one that we drove, there's two electric motors. So in all, it's like they say it's rated for 835 horsepower, which is crazy.
Yeah,
it sprints from 0 to 60, I think, in like 4 seconds, something around there. So it's really fast.
But it's
so electrified in the way it drives. You know, it doesn't feel like the two powertrains are kind of fighting each other when the car really gets going.
Yeah, and it just right. It's a good way to put it. Like this feels like the way to go for me. And this is like why I don't love plug-in hybrids. And it's I'm actually pro hybrid, as you know. Like I feel like, if you're gonna, we're talking about reducing gas use and reducing emissions, like let's make more normal cars hybrids. But I don't love the plug-ins I've driven, because like to go back to this car's equivalent in America, it's that Volvo XC90, which again is a very nice car. But like last time I had one, I had to plug it in on my home charger, and I had to put $60 worth of premium gas in it, in my trips back and forth to New York City. And I was like, this is like the worst of both. Like this sucks. And it like most plug-in hybrids, it getting those two systems, the electric system and the gas system, to play nicely and play smoothly and play seamlessly, it's really hard from an engineering perspective. This is why car companies like hate making these things. But this Lincoln Co. kind of figured it out. It's just like you just make it an EV that happens to have a gas engine that recharges the batteries, right?
Yep. It's pretty great. I think it also proves that, just like, you know, wherever we go from here, because I think a lot of people think that as ICE unfortunately makes a return, that we're just going to go back to, you know, the old template of, you know, traditional transmission, traditional engine, you know, type vehicles. And I don't think that's going to happen. I think if we do keep, you know, internal combustion engines around, it's probably going to be in cars like this. You know, we're going to have powertrain styles like this. We're not going to go back to the old way of thinking there, no.
Not long term, anyway. As this comes out, I believe the news will be out that Stellantis, parent company of Ram and Jeep and Dodge, announced that they're bringing back one of their Hemi V8s. And by bringing back, I mean literally bringing back. It's not a new Hemi that's like more efficient or more powerful or whatever. It's like the same 5.7 liter V8 that they started making in 2003. So it's a little disheartening to see that happen. It's like, okay, I can see you doing this as like a stopgap, but like it doesn't feel like the future when we could be driving stuff like we experienced over in China, right?
Insane. But whatever. Yeah. I mean, I guess they're going to keep pushing that button until like they run out of chargers.
Oil.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, I don't know how long they can go down that road before people get tired of that, but we'll see.
I don't know, but I just, after driving this, like I remember I talked to a guy at Geely, and I was like, yeah, I don't really like most plug-in hybrids. And he was like, yeah, it's because you've driven American ones. But he was right. The dude was right. He was absolutely right.
I feel like, especially when I drive a lot of American plug-in hybrids, I'm always like fighting for them to stay in EV mode. Like the Prius plug-in is nice, but it's kind of like the exception to the rule. The Chrysler Pacifica hybrid is nice, but the second you accelerate too hard, it'll start the engine.
Yeah.
a lot of the Chrysler hybrids are like that. It's just be Stellantis. I keep calling it Chrysler.
I'm
such a Michigan person, right? I'm very Midwestern.
Well, so Stellantis is a horrifying name to say out loud anyway. I'm always embarrassed when I do.
I love calling it Chrysler. I still say Dodge Ram.
Yeah. You and everybody else in America.
Yeah. But and even the Hyundai hybrids, you know, they have like their weird, like, you know, 6-speed transmission and a little bitty electric motor. Where once again, if you accelerate too hard, it'll start the engine.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, the engine off electric driving is just such an afterthought.
Yeah, and just some of them, also the engines they put in those hybrids in particular, it's like they sound like industrial equipment. I mean, it's like some of them, it's like there's no like all that soul and passion that people love about gas engines. It's like it sounds like a printing press or something, and, it doesn't want to work.
It sounds like a spoon in a blender.
Yeah. It's like
gross.
It's like, oh God, I guess I'll click over and start charging the battery. Oh God, sure, fine. Like, you know, like the 80-year-old dude that's like, you know, getting kicked out of bed to do something he doesn't want to do or something. But I don't know. I feel like if more plug-in hybrid options go that route, we make the batteries bigger and you expose more Americans to that experience, I think it's going to win them over. Especially if you're like, hey, you have to worry about range anxiety all that much, like, because you've got the gas engine to back you up. But in the meantime, you get all the great EV experience that you've ever wanted. That sort of will warp people up to this concept.
I also think that it may end up switching people over to full EV. I think it's a good transitory, like, you know, step. I feel like the problem with people buying EVs that they are people EV skeptics, that they really do think that they're going to drive a lot more than they are.
Yeah.
And I think if you get an EREV or a PHEV that has like that kind of range, they'll start realizing, maybe I can just drive mostly on electric. Maybe I really don't need the gas engine and all that complexity. Maybe my next car should be an electric car. You know, I'm realizing that I don't really need all that. This is also America, though, so I could be completely wrong. I mean, how many people had Volts and just never plugged them in? So,
I don't know, but like that's a weird realization a lot of people make when they buy electric cars. It actually happened to me. I've heard of a lot of our readers about that. It's like I got one. I was so worried about range, and then I was like, I actually didn't drive it nearly as much as I thought I would. Like, besides like 2 road trips a year, and then the next EV I bought had a little less range, and I was fine. And it's like, you kind of start overkill and you start to think about your own energy use and what you actually need and want in daily driving. And it really kind of becomes less of an issue. So,
yep, that's, I miss my iMEV. You know, before it died, I was getting maybe 30 miles of range and that was enough for 85% of my driving.
Yeah.
It was a little embarrassing. The only times and there were definitely some times I wish I had a little bit more. But not as many times as you would think.
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely. And it's just like, even if I go back to our old friend, the Seagull, something like that was sold in America. How many people would have that even as their second car? Like, I knew a lot of people that had a Bolt even as their second car. It's like, yeah, I didn't drive it all the time, but for like most of my round town errands, it was great. Like, you know, and then you have the gas car or whatever for road tripping, you know?
Yeah. It's funny. Cause a local Chrysler dealer,
Stellantis dealer, right?
Ha ha ha. No, it's actually a Chrysler dealer. But they're running specials on Fiat 500s, and I might just take them up on that offer. I don't really like that car that much, but they're doing for 138 down, 138 a month.
I mean,
and that's in Ohio where we don't have any tax incentives. And I'm just like, you know, that you might have tempted me on that one.
I mean, nobody's buying them. I feel like you could go to the dealer and like just you know, ask how their day is and be nice to them, and they'll let you like just leave with a car. You know, it's like, hey, yeah, just take it, honestly. Yeah.
Probably.
Good stuff.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Well, in our final segment, as I was planning this podcast of the week, it's been a little slower on the EV news front lately and a little gloomier than usual for reasons we don't need to go into. It's also summertime, too. So I thought to Kevin, I was like, you know, we should do something fun on this podcast for a change so we don't have to talk about tariffs or tax credits or anything. And you brought up this great idea when we were talking in Slack about, like, what car should be an EV that isn't an EV? And I think this is a fun thought exercise to do something now that it's June. But, like, you had a great answer to that question. All right. Like, what car do you think should be electric that isn't electric?
Yeah, it's funny because I was going to write about this, but I'm always writing, going to write about something, right? But I had a Honda Civic Hybrid that I got kind of by a fluke. Like, I forgot to cancel it, and then they showed up at my house with it, and I'm like, well, we got it. But it's kind of interesting how Honda's hybrid system works. I was explaining earlier with the two motors and how that car is mostly electrically driven. It's gas engine that just kind of, like, you know, make sure the battery is right where it's supposed to be. And I'm like, you know, well, damn, you're already kind of halfway there to being an EV.
Yeah.
I've got this 100, I think it's like 180 horsepower electric motor that basically propels the car around. But the car's traction battery, you know, the hybrid battery, that's only like 1 kilowatt.
Which is that small? Right? Wow, I didn't know that.
It's dinky. And because of that, it, like, discharges and charges up really quickly. But I was like, well, what if we made a PHEV Civic or made it fully electric? I mean, it's not like you would have to change the powertrain part that much, right? You know, just get rid of the 2-liter engine and all the fuel tank stuff, and then put like a 40 to 60 kilowatt hour battery underneath that. I would buy that. I thought about that when I had the Prius Prime too, about a couple years back, where I was like, you know, this is great, but what if it had 40 to 60 kilowatt hours worth of batteries underneath instead of a gas engine and all the fuel stuff? Like, you know, just small, sleek cars that are fun to drive, but also not that expensive to buy. It's funny because, like, you know, going back to China, you know, there's so many cars like that. Like, you know, the car I'm describing that right now could be the XPeng Mona, or any given, you know, compact sedan. There's so many to choose from. Whereas here in the United States, the only thing we got is the Model 3, kind of.
Kind of. Maybe the Kia EV4 will fill that niche.
That thing is weird looking.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I love their design, but I think that one, the EV4 specifically, they didn't quite nail the brief.
The hashtag is nice looking, but we're not getting that one. So, which is funny because that's something I would buy. And the Ioniq 6 is too big.
They're out to thwart you personally, I feel like, you know?
They really are. I feel like they're going through my phone and they're going through my email. They're seeing what I like. And he's like, you know what? We're not going to make this. I don't want him in our showrooms.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I guess. Like, everything is a weird crossover that's somehow $70,000.
Yeah, yeah. You went to China too many times.
I did. I really did. I went too many times, and now they probably read my articles and just, like, disregard. He's been to China.
Yeah. The CIA is going through your phone. They're like, screw this guy, man. We're not making anything he likes, you know?
Yeah, they're sending transcripts of my text message to Mary Barra so we can.
My answer was actually very similar to one you brought up earlier. It's like, I want an EV Prius, man. Like, I even have a name for this. I you know how it's like Coke Zero? I call it the Prius Zero, just like there's Prius Prime and there's the Prius Zero. It's like, we're just, you know, it's basically the same car you've always had. We're just cutting out all the gas entirely.
You know, what's even crazier. They low key already have that in China. It's the BZ5.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Which actually looks awesome. and it looks awesome. Yeah, I saw those cruising around. Because, like, I actually think the BZ4X from Toyota is a pretty cool-looking car. I'm kind of in the minority on that, but I like the way it looks. I see this this low, sleek sedan that's driving around with a Toyota badge. I was like, oh, shit, what is that? Oh, my God. And that's what that is.
Yeah, you know, I think I was telling you when we were there, I was like, you know, we were looking at Toyota's lineup, and it's kind of not stellar, but I wonder what life would be like if they just decided to import them anyway. You know, like, what if we did have the BZ3 and the BZ3X and the BZ5 and the BZ7 and any other BZ cars that went missing? Like, what if those were already on Toyota lots? Would they be perfect? No, they would probably be not great, but they would exist.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I feel like if Toyota sold the BZ3 sedan here or the BZ5 hatchback and they had lease deals similar to the BZ4X, I would probably have one.
Some of those that we saw in China with Toyota badges, like, yeah, the sedans, like the bigger SUV. There was kind of this sort of like off-road outdoor package on a BZ5. I was like, just a couple of those, that would do well in America. Like it would just, that would hit the sweet spot for people here, I think.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people say, well, they're developed with their Chinese partners. I'm like, well, what does developed mean? You know, like, are they similar to what we're getting in other parts of the world? Even, like, Honda says that, too, with their Ye line, the Ye P7 and the Ye S7. And I just kind of wonder, like, what's stopping you from putting U.S.-compliant batteries and making this thing in Marysville? Like, why did you guys spend all this money on making a second, you know, EV project that's a little bit pretentious and will be super expensive? You know, why can't we have our, you know, EV Prius or EV Civic that low-key already exists somewhere else? What are we doing here?
I've wondered this about all of the General Motors plug-in hybrids they sell in China. It's like, you guys invented this stuff. You invented the Volt. Like, why isn't it here? And, like, they've kind of low-key told us. It's like, oh, it's because the batteries are wrapped up in China. It's like, well, can we
get a new battery
around that?
I mean, right. Yeah. Right. Can't you ask a local supplier to match the specs on this?
Yeah.
It's not rocket science, right?
LG is a Korean company. They have a huge presence in America. They're like, baby, we're ready to rock. Like, just like call us anytime. Like, they'd figure it out and, like, give those guys a weekend, I bet. You know, they'd get it done.
Yeah. It just all seems so silly. And I think that's what kind of pisses Americans off. Like, you know, it definitely pisses me off. You know, it just seems like every time we ask, why can't we have better things? There's always a complicated reason of why they're not going to try. And I think that's just how things go in the United States in general. And I think that's what's like, I think everyone's at their wits' end with this.
You wrote a great story about this last year. It's that a lot of Americans are getting exposed to more affordable Chinese cars via TikTok and via Little Red Book, the sort of quasi TikTok social media channel.
Right.
And like, you wrote that story and it's like, thanks to the magic of the algorithm or whatever's going on there, All these Americans are like, why can't I buy this great car that's like $8,000, $15,000, under $20,000? And it's not like car enthusiasts like pining for like, why can't I buy the Civic Type R or the RS6 Avant?
No, people are poor. Yeah. People are poor. People do not have the money to have principles or to make stuff up. You know, what they're seeing is that they're looking on TikTok and they're seeing cars like the BYD Seagull that have, like, you know, fully featured interiors and look really cute and really nice for $8,000. And they walk into a Toyota dealer and they're upsold a RAV4 for $35,000. That's like, you know, has a $700 a month payment.
Yeah.
And that's like the best, that's the best they can afford. And that's frustrating. That is frustrating. I understand why average people are so tired.
Yeah. I call it the great squeeze out. Yeah. It's just every area of your life, you're getting squeezed out right now. Groceries, you know, salary, just like cost of everything, cost of cars, whatever. And you have to, you see why people are getting fed up and like why they would turn to a cheaper option if they had it. And I hear from people all the time, oh, I'd never buy a Chinese car. Never buy a Chinese car. Look, if you got a good enough deal, you do it.
I have told so many Chinese executives, you know, because they worry if they were to come to the United States, if they would have, like, you know, Sinophobia. And I'm like, yeah, on some level you probably would. But I think Americans are kind of all talk. You know, I think the second that they find something that they perceive as a good deal, they will forget. They won't care.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so scary to a lot of, like, you know, Western automakers, because they know it. I'm like, the second something like a BYD Seagull or a Geely Xingyuan or even like what or any other given, you know, Chinese electric car, it wouldn't even have to be an EV. I would be 0% surprised if like a Chinese automaker started with a hybrid of some sort and, you know, undercut everybody. I think they would absolutely dominate if the price is right and the car stayed together decent enough. I don't care.
All right, cool. Now let's wrap this up. It's time for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world this week. Kevin, who you got for me?
Yeah, so I think positive, we're probably going to do, I think, charging infrastructure here. You know, I think there's a JD Power came out that says that with a study this week that says that, you know, finally the perceptions of charging infrastructure are starting to improve.
Mm.
Which I think is a really good, you know, way to get more people behind the wheel, really to assure them that, hey, this is not so scary.
I have a plus this week. For me, it's General Motors and Ford, actually. We have this excellent story that Suvrat Kotari did on our website. I would highly recommend folks read it. It's about how both of those American automakers are racing towards manganese-rich LMR batteries. And basically, if they pull this off, it's kind of a way that we can, America, we sound like a bad Boston sports writer when I say like we as in America, but it's a way that America can sort of like get around China's utter dominance of certain battery materials. And that's why they like own the LFP lithium iron phosphate battery chain all around the world. Like they own that. And so like this could be a thing that like the United States and its allies own. And it's kind of cool to see, like, you know, our two biggest automakers like still like in kind of a competitive race with each other to make this happen. So like I hope they pull it off, especially in Ford's case, because I think where they kind of screwed up in the EV race was they got batteries and battery sourcing wrong. But if they pull this off, they're hopefully back in the game. So that's pretty cool to see. All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, leave us a review, and tell a friend to tune in. It really helps us out. If you like what you heard, you can find us on your favorite social media platform and check out all our latest coverage on InsideEVs.com. See you next time.
See you next time.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.